Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
March Magic in high school basketball is on display. We completed the college basketball March Madness with a great performance by the Baylor Bears.
Yes, they are. Man, the Baylor Bears came through and say, hey, look, this is what we do.
Yeah.
The guard Butler and Mitchell, they look like an NBA backcourt.
Yeah. After I watched that Gonzaga UCLA, and I seen Baylor play close up, I thought, you know, even going into the game, they were still underdogs, right? All the odds makers are still picking Gonzaga. And it was like, you can pick them if you want to.
That's right.
But these guys is too long and athletic for them boys at Gonzaga. And Gonzaga was a solid team, right? There were no slouch. They made it 20-0. But Baylor told them the O must go.
Yeah, and then Timmy got roots in Muskegon.
I seen that.
Yeah, his daddy. I was like, oh. His daddy was good. I was in the, what, ninth grade. I remember going to them games because he played against, who was that, Darren Davis, them, I think, 91, yep.
Really?
Yeah, and that was a good team of Hikes, but that white boy was, he was a tough customer.
He was good.
Yeah, he was. He averaged like 25, and he could hoop. And he went to SMU. He played at SMU. He didn't go JUCO or nothing. He went straight D1.
And okay.
So I don't think Puffer had nobody like that.
Since our boy went to Michigan.
Yep. Yes, right. Mark Hughes.
Mark Hughes, yep. Yeah.
Then his nephew, yeah. Jerry. I mean, yeah, the nephews, yeah, Jerry and Mark them and JR. JR probably was the next stud. But after that, it ain't been nobody like that.
No. Mm-mm. No. There's been nobody like that, man.
No. It's hard to find. Them diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, no doubt. But I was glad the way it came out. I'm glad Baylor won because they had some struggles during the season, too, with COVID. So yep. They were able to overcome that.
And they was in a tough conference because you had Oklahoma.
I
really liked Oklahoma State. I really liked them.
I thought they was going to make a bigger run deeper.
But, that was a brother coach, too. He had them boys playing.
Yeah. You know? So. Samson did a good job with his squad out of Houston.
Yes, he did.
I was surprised.
You know, Samson. Yeah, why Samson, though? It might be some allegations.
Oh it's going to be. Just win.
Because he was walking around campus trying to get people to come to the game. When he got there, they was like, we ain't got no team. Like, oh, yeah.
We don't have one.
I got a team. I helped that money move.
Just give me a few brown bags.
Yeah. And then the up and down about college basketball for me, Hubert Davis got the North Carolina job.
Yes. He's been an assistant there for a number of years.
12, I think. Yep.
They didn't go through that dog and pony show, national recruiting and all that kind of stuff. I like to see those organizations that promote within.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm for diversity and everything. I'm for it. But it's he brought up in the interview, Hubert Davis brought up in the interview, he said, and I understood his angle because of the climate we in the world today, where he said, and I'm not going to take him out of context or anything, he said, because they asked him a question about his relationships. He was like, the strongest relationship I got is my wife, and I'm glad she white, and my kids, they got a mixture of me and her. Mm-hmm. So the end statement is what he meant. Cause he's talking about he got a view of how diversity is.
Okay.
But when he said he got a white wife, you know, people media take that out of context.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They'll run with it. But I see what he was trying to say. Be like, when it comes to recruiting, it don't matter who gonna be in front of me. Uh-huh. That's how I looked at that statement when he said it. Yeah. Like, thank God I got a white wife, cause I know what he's talking about. Cause when he at home, he could tell her the issues that he's going through, or he could see how she dealt with it in society and how he's helped with, and you can see how her kids being treated. So it's a deeper lesson that he's really saying. So the media take it out of context right now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and then you still got to remember he's in the South, right?
Oh yeah, he know.
Yeah, he's still in the South. So cause it was one team that kneeled. It was Kentucky, I believe it was. The basketball team knelt during the national anthem. And I guess they got a lot of backlash from some of the older staunch supporters of the Wildcats.
Yep. So that's why I'll never jump to conclusions when somebody say something. I always try to look at that perspective that they're at. I'm like, okay, why he said that? He in Tobacco Road, okay, down the street.
Bible Belt.
Yep. You got Virginia that's not too far away. You got all, like you said, the Bible Belt. You got this Baptist mindset.
Okay.
And he said, thank God for my white wife that I can deal with the conflict and the racial issues in-house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I think. He's like, I got an in-house lesson every day.
Yep. And I think he also realizes that as his sons or daughters enter into society, judgment's going to be made, right?
That's
either
right.
White or you're black.
Yep.
Okay. And you're going to be treated as such. And I think overall, majority would say that if you have a percentage of you are black.
Oh, you black. One drop. It's called one drop rule. You already know. That's your area. Old school. That's one drop. Yeah. You one drop, you that.
Right.
But that's what he said. I wish he would have just said one drop rule.
Yeah.
Say that I know my kids got my blood too. And I thank God for having this relationship that's teaching me every day. That's what marriage really does.
Come on.
It gives you a perspective on humanity. And he's looking at the context of the skin and saying, hey, I got a first class one-on-one lesson mm-hmm. on how to deal with the culture that I'm in.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that if we were to take a deep dive in her background, how she was raised, there is a possibility that at some point in time through her family,
yes, sir.
There may have been some issues around racism.
Oh, yeah.
Some people in the family
were
racist than others. Maybe it wasn't in her household, but she got to experience it.
Oh, yeah. Or she got the experience where some of my friends that are not African American,
right.
They get ostracized from their family.
Yeah.
Some of their family members, not their mama or their daddy, or it might be their dad or their mom. So I ain't talking to you no more if you marry him or if you marry her. I've seen that happen.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we're a financial show, but that goes into financial context of how society is. And getting to our point today, we got George Floyd. You got to look at it, Tony. You got to think somebody's on trial for going too far, and they still trying to validate the man that's dead as either a drug addict
mm-hmm.
or a criminal mm-hmm. or something, so they can make it manslaughter or something like that where he can have an out date. And this is what I notice in society is like the value of a brother is like, it's crazy. Give them the money. Go ahead and get them some millions.
$27 million is what they were paid.
Yep. Get them some money, right? Now, I'm going to spank you on your hand. Don't do that again. I'm going to give you 10, 15 years or 20, a life sentence. Club fed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do that no more. And just go on. Because it's drawn out. It's almost like all the evidence is there. The chief spoke. The other commanding officer spoke with all this
training
34.
Officers.
Yes.
A lot of the brass and even outsiders. They brought people in from outside of the Minneapolis Police Department to testify about, you know, police procedure.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, the caveat to this whole thing is the police union is actually paying the attorney fees for this guy that's on trial. It's not anything that he has to come up with.
Part of his union.
Part of his union. And, you know, they're trying to protect this guy, right?
Yep.
And I understand the due process of law. But at some point, you got to be rational and realistic and say, are we really doing what's right?
Yep. Now, okay? I'm going to hit you with this one. Because, like, you know, I got old. My parents was like, my daddy could have been your daddy. That's how old my family is.
Right.
My wife was asking me yesterday, how old was your granddad, your daddy when he died? I was like, he was 98 and I was in the second grade. She was like, she looked at me like, yeah, you, like it's 2020. He was 98 and 84. I said, yeah, he was 98 and 84. So she was like, wow, you got a history of like post-slavery. I said, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And one thing I've, like the context with police officers, and I'm lucky we grew up in the Heights. The context of police officers, my father used to always tell me, he said, police officers was not meant to police. They were meant when the abolition of slavery came. You mm-hmm. had to have somebody to gather up the people again and enforce a law. So I'm looking at this case today, Tony. It's like this layer of trauma. But there's one institute that got the money mm-hmm. and the support and the union to say, all right, my trauma's cool. I got to work in this environment, so I got to either shoot or I can use force. But you got some trauma from all these hundreds and layers of years that's absolutely subconsciously hidden in you, and you a threat to me, but I got all of everything on my side mm-hmm. as a commanding officer. Now, I'm not talking about today's aging officer, but it's some genetic It's some generational things on why some people become police officers, because you got to think.
Oh.
Institutionalized racism, hate groups, all those other spaces are filled when it comes to being a police officer, being a judge,
yeah,
being a lawyer. The institution has always been pushing the initiative to keep the personification, to keep the written law, the written word,
mm-hmm,
and to keep the power hoarding.
Yep.
So.
You know, and that's the layer is just like what's happening in Georgia, right?
Yes, sir. With the voting.
With the voting. That's another layer, right? It's another part of systemic racism, okay? And that trial, as well as the going on in Georgia, is somewhat parallel because it's still a power grab, okay? Because this case, it's going to be a precedent, all right? However this case plays out, it's going to be a precedent as to how they hold police accountable in the future. Because a lot of times in a lot of states, you know, they are immune from prosecution.
Oh, yeah. They got the money. Here, pay the money. You on your way.
Yeah.
You going back to society. You're not going to have this job, but we're going to compensate you. You got to retire. We just saw that with the guy downtown in Muskegon.
Yeah.
With the Juju case.
Yeah.
He was obviously guilty. They told him, go on to retire.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll pay your pension. See you later.
See you later.
So he ain't in jail.
Nope.
But he's obviously guilty all the way on the left side, wherever, mm-hmm, you want to call it. But he was able to walk scot-free.
Scot-free. And then the one that the family that went to buy a house, right?
That's the same guy. Yep, that,
same guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. They saw that memorabilia in the house.
Yeah.
And the argument was, oh, that's art. No, it was on my wall in my office right now. That's art. That's African mask.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not art.
That's not art. No, so no, you don't say I got that at an auction and then I got it right in my hallway. You probably
there's no justification for, yep, that.
But then look, that goes into, we talk about credit and debt help. That's going into a system where somebody didn't have a log when they pulled people over.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the evidence of how many years he worked. Like it was like 5 years. He didn't have a record of like tickets or anything. He's just doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it's like a teacher not having lesson plans, a teacher not getting an evaluation.
Evaluation,
it was
absolutely.
Like 5 years. I'm like, so he just got to do what he wanted to do for 5 years. That's the power struggle we're talking about when it say, yeah, financially. He could take somebody's livelihood away from them, from their family, and look at the repercussions and the layers you're talking about, of trauma.
Yeah.
And the poverty somebody would be in because, oh, every time I see you, I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
Like, you ain't going to find no police report. I don't have to.
Mm-mm. Well, between body cams and iPhones, that dynamic has changed, right? Even though we go back to the Rodney King case, and it was clearly abuse and of power, they were acquitted because of the jury makeup. But still, you know, these things now are going to be front and center to the American public, and these guys are going to be held to the court of public opinion as well as criminal courts.
It's serious business, but like it's just so many issues. It's just spiraling. Like we got our president making sure that things are aligned, trying to align financially with these bills that's coming out.
Yeah.
But as these bills and this money comes out, how it's going to be distributed evenly. So let's take this one. So we talk about this city Flint that go from pandemic to pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So they passed this bill where they can spread this $600 million dollars out to this community. Wow, that's fine. All right, that's some form of liberation. That's some form of trying to get my life back on track, even, mm-hmm, though I got this Legionnaires, I got my piping's messed up.
Blood disorders.
Yeah. My IQ has dropped.
Lead levels in children.
Yep. All this.
Which is a learning, if they've already determined that's a learning defect.
Yeah, about 2 or 3 grade levels behind. So now I got a position, I'm in a position, or I would call it a disposition, where I got to go down to the county building and prove my identity.
Make
in
a
space that, let's go back, in a space that a lot of times when I'm at the county building, it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I got the police to mess with me. So now I got to go and say I'm such and such. Okay. Here go my ID. And they know you down there to get some money.
Yeah, and they going to run a check.
So what's the flip the script part about the financial liberation?
you go down and get your money and you get locked up.
Then your wages get garnished. Oh, he's going to get this benefit. We taking this. He got this bill. So I wonder how that's – can that be protected in the CARES Act or something? I'm like, I hope it is.
Yeah. If it is, it's, you know, it's buried in there somewhere.
Yeah, it's buried.
It hasn't been talked about.
Yep. I'm going to share something. And I'm bringing up the Flint because and I tried to pull this article up. I couldn't. I was like, wow, this world is crazy. And it's like I'm thinking about the book Dr. Mona wrote about Flint, What Your Eyes Don't See. So Genesee County is Flint County, right?
Right.
That's where Flint is at.
County of Genesee.
Genesee. So there's this law group, these three lawyers, fishermen, right? Fisherman Law Group. And, you know, credit my thing. You know, investment's yours.
Right.
So I'm always trying to figure out how to help people for the lowest amount because I know that there's people out there that's crooks and scam artists and
got that right.
trying to capitalize on people that come from demographics and zip codes like myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to make it a monetary way to help my people because I know that a lawyer or somebody gonna try to, you know, marginalize our people in the margins.
No doubt.
So here's an example, audience. This is what happened. So these three lawyers put in garnishments for up $1 million on people that had past due medical and collections, right? Mm-hmm. They put the garnishment in, but they never took it to court, and they got $1 million cool cash.
Out of the settlement money that was supposed to come from the Flint water crisis? Is that
no,
what paid?
This is for something else. So during the STEMIs hit,
okay.
So imagine the STEMI about to get ready to hit. Somebody, they don't go to court. I don't know how they got the paperwork without
going to court.
Without submitting to court.
Yeah.
Because the lawyers got their system of putting something in.
Mm-hmm.
But you could put it in, but you still got to get off a judge or somebody to sign it
off.
The court to sign it off, right?
Absolutely.
They never did that. And they made $1 million of garnishments during the same time STEMIs hit. And it's, look, I tried to pull an article up. I couldn't.
It's buried. They took it off. They got rid of it. That's a lot of money for basically doing nothing.
But how do you know them people owe them debts? Because, see, a lot of times you know what happens. A lot of people don't have they don't have the knowledge to understand how to get something off their credit report. So they'll pay something and it'll still be on their credit report.
Yeah.
So now it's still on your credit report. Somebody else, another collector, will call you on a scheme tip trying to gain you. You know you got this debt. Well, I paid that. Where the receipt at? Then they put the garnishment in. They hit you again.
Yeah, and again, just like you said earlier, I thought the garnishment had to be on record in the court. Somebody has to say that, yeah, this is a legal obligation.
Foul play.
Of this person, and, you know, if they don't show up at court.
30 days.
Contest it.
Right.
Then you are awarded by default, because they didn't show up.
That's right.
You're awarded the right to garnish.
That didn't happen.
Interesting.
You can look it up. I can't even get the article to come up.
But
I can get it to come up, right? But I can't get the whole article to come up.
Wow. These guys are in Flint or in just Genesee County.
Yep, Genesee County.
Not necessarily
yep.
Flint.
So fishermen. Yep, fishermen garnishment, Genesee County. And it don't even come up. It just come up as garnishment. And then it say $1 million. But I know the whole story. Because I'm always looking for stuff about how to help people. So
right.
The audience, think about it. So you got a hold of some money and some excess or some stimulus and you needed your bills paid,
your
food, clothing, and shelter. And somebody, a group of lawyers, put in a garnishment. And how they bypass the court? That's why somebody
investigative reporter needs to dig into this one.
Somebody at work in the system, in that court system, either forge a signature or process the paperwork without them people going through due process. So they probably had the signature, but they never did the 30 days.
Right. The notice, yeah. Yeah, and that might have been, you know, that first STEMI came under the prior administration. And
it got snatched.
The laws that were written for that might have been okay for garnishment.
Yes, sir.
And I don't think this last round under the present administration, I don't think they were allowing those to be garnished.
It's CARES. The CARES Act covered that. But somehow, that previous one, it had to be, because, you know, it usually go by the quarters. So the last one not the last one we just got, that one before that.
The one that was $600. That was $600.
Yeah, that was a quick snatch. And that was around that New Year's time. So you gotta think, tax time, we're gonna get their money. Yeah. And I'm like, they probably filed it with the court and they just pushed the button. It was like, we ain't gonna wait 30 days. We getting this million, they ain't gonna come no way. That's a cool million.
That's it, man. That's a cool million.
Man, and I just look at stuff like, and then like the next thing in the pandemic bill, because see, we're talking about hierarchy systems. And America is a hierarchy system where a decision's made at the top, and by the time it get to the man at the bottom, man, it's by like it's like a sprinkle of rain if you're looking for it.
Trickle
of seeds.
Trickle down.
So like the black farmers, the $5 billion that set aside for them, I know they struggled during this pandemic. I know they did.
All of them had. Just think about it. You know, they provide food to schools, right? Restaurants, bars. They weren't open for the most part. They weren't preparing.
If you're a provider for somebody, you're not even getting the meat.
Crops just sit on the field and rot it. If you harvest them, what are you gonna do with them?
Yep. Okay, then the food gleaners, the food trucks, they couldn't even give away enough food.
They couldn't give.
They was having extra. I remember doing some food truck pickups, and it was like nobody was even there.
Yeah, yeah. So they're definitely hurting because that's a hard comeback. You know that I know the profit margin is not great for these small farmers because of the institutional farmers. All right, those are the ones that make the money. Okay, they're the ones that have all the high tech equipment, and they can get out and harvest their crops, and marginalize their profits.
Yeah, or like when the first STEMI happened, and the former president had signed a bill where those farmers got a big check. And some of those farmers got a check and said, I don't even need this.
Don't even need it.
It was like $250,000. I'll buy another truck. I'll have fun with this.
Yeah, it was another form of welfare, right?
Yeah.
And they
complained about it. It's like, why you give me all this money?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I don't even need it. But I'll take it. I'll take the check.
And then there were so many that got it on the business side, the PP loans, and didn't deserve it.
Didn't deserve it.
Okay, so there was a lot of corruption in those first rounds of STEMI that was set up, and I think it was designed that way. It was designed to allow fraud and corruption to flourish in that environment.
Yeah, but I ain't trying to go hard on our public, but I got something positive. So I got an article with this beautiful young lady, Laura Simmons, Russell Simmons' niece, and Reverend Run's daughter.
Reverend Run.
You know, Reverend Run DMC. Yeah. So she like, Laura Simmons is one of the hottest young ladies, but her brains is make her even better. So, you know, it's good out there, audience, to be pretty, but what's going on upstairs?
Oh, yeah.
That make a relationship
beauty's
a lot
only
better.
Skin deep.
Man, I'm telling you. I look at my wife every day, but I look at her brain. Be like, girl, your brain is, I like it. As long as your head is working, it's all good. You're a beautiful person, but that mind is a terrible thing to waste. And looking at this young lady, she was the youngest ever female stockbroker on Wall Street.
23 years old.
Man, and she's getting ready to drop this mini-series called Going Public. So it says, this 10-part series will give diverse entrepreneurs a chance to win over investors and become a publicly traded company, an IPO, Tony.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
sort of like the Shark Tank, right?
Yeah.
Where I try to watch that show, but those people on that show, on that panel, they're just so arrogant.
They don't have sensitivity.
It's like, you know what? If I had to go to you people to get some money, I wouldn't come.
I ain't coming. But look who started that. You already know. They got the mindset.
Who's that?
I think didn't Trump start the Shark Tank with the... He had his own little entrepreneur thing before. He didn't have a Shark Tank.
No, he had...
Let's make a deal or something like that.
Something crazy.
I'm not trying to remember a lot of things he did anyway.
You're fired. I know that that was a phrase that came out of whatever that clown did.
I'm like, I don't even put Shark Tank there with him. So
no.
All his ideas fail.
So that's a great, great concept, man. Yeah. I love that.
And she's good people and she's known out there. And I just like her story where I even highlighted some things. It said... Simmons, she's going to help the viewers, you know, get a IPO, right? Mm-hmm. But then Simmons made history when she became the youngest full-time female trader on Wall Street at 23. She's also the second African-American woman in the 226-year history of the New York Stock Exchange to hold the title, according to Simmons' LinkedIn. Now, they put her LinkedIn there, and which she would probably be right because when you talk about the word Black Friday stock exchange, that's the ports. We talking about all that East Coast seaboard. You got Virginia, you got North Carolina, you got Florida, you got Boston, Tea Party area.
Eastern seaboard.
That's right. So you got these ports that's really with slave ports.
That's what they started out.
So now they bringing in commodities and trading things. So when you think about an African-American woman being pivotal of going into the stock exchange and learning that business and being successful and then saying, okay, I made enough money. I know how to do this. Now I'm going to make a miniseries and a show and show my people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the old earth, I call it the earth, the woman. You know, because the person that's been most affected in our pandemic, Tony, I say this all the time, it's women.
It's women.
Because they burden their families.
No, don't they, fact.
They're working jobs, right? And most of the times, I mean, we are in blessed situations. We got significant others. A lot of times, women don't have a significant
right.
other. They by themselves with their kids.
With their kids.
And they trying to make 15 cents, out, make a dollar. And think about it, dealing with COVID. They dealing with their job. And seeing this young lady in this experience, saying, I'm going to really step out on a limb and do something else. And then do something else again and build this capacity. It's something that needs to be advertised in a deeper context. Because when you truly understand financial literacy and you get to the point where you understand there's no such thing as extra money and you can start investing your money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to share a story with you. I'm doing my taxes, right? And I'm going through all my little forms you get from when you invest. So I'm like, what happened? I know I put this much money up in a month. What that paper? It should say this. So I'm looking through all these documents, right? Because, you know, you do... rich sharing and you do crowdfunding, you got all these. I'm like, what is other money at? So I called my financial advisor from the school. I'm like, man, what? He says, right there. I looked and I was like, it was double, almost double.
Okay.
So it was like 35% more than what I put in. I was like, he said, yeah.
You didn't recognize it.
Yeah, I didn't recognize it. He said, Lolo, he said, you rolled the bear market out. Mm-hmm. That's what you did. You said you stayed in. So you say it's been a $10,000 investment will be $16,000 right now. So if you put $10,000 in, you expect to see $16,000.
Right.
I was like, oh.
Yeah.
He said, if you put $10,000 in, you made an extra $6,000. I was like, that don't usually happen.
Right. That's your money working
for
you.
Yeah, I'm
man.
Thinking about, okay, I'm looking for like 11, 12, right?
Yeah.
Typical market. I'm like, he's like, no, it was good last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said,
during the pandemic.
Yep, he said they pumped money in. They didn't do like the last pandemic. He said they pumped money into it. Interest rates was low. And he said things happened because it was a health pandemic. So money had to be spent in certain areas. And he said the commodities and the things you were invested in, they hit their little, they bubbles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they grew. But then I'm going back to this young lady. Being able to understand financial literacy and you don't have to buy everything up.
Right.
And you can look at your dollar and your bottom line and say, all right, I'm going to say this. I'm only going to spend this. I'm only going to do that. That enriches your experience. So when you do have some extra, you got emergency fund, you got things in space where you can do better. So it just made me think about her. I'm like, because at 23, I was clubbing.
Okay.
I'm just going to tell the truth. I had a job. I bought a new car and I had a condo, but I was balling out of control.
Right.
She at 23. She walking.
She's 23, man. She's down for the business.
Yeah.
She working now.
Man. She's working. That's hard work.
That's a great story, man.
Yes, it is. So
I just hope that, you know, there will be a lot of investors that I think will seed this process for her. You know, if she gets a couple million dollars and able to help some entrepreneurs. But you got to come right, okay? I'm pretty sure it's not one of these, I want to open up a hot dog stand type
right.
of adventure. You know,
yeah.
it's got to be something where you have basically done the due diligence. You know, you got a good business plan in place. And it's something that has value.
You know what she about to do? I see it already. You know, Jay-Z, and he got Afrotech. Afrotech is a platform for African-Americans to bring their ideas in too. It's a platform.
Not just music. Okay.
We talking about technology. We talking about apps. Anything. They call it Afrotech. And okay. Jay-Z sponsoring it, right?
Oh, I never heard that one.
So that's going to be a connection right there.
Yeah. They can partner.
Yep. So when you got somebody on a platform, like, I got this thing. They doing this thing with Afrotech with me. It's not public yet. What you think of this, Simmons? Oh, bring them on the show. Let's see if they can pitch it to us.
Yeah. Let's see what they got.
But see, that's that conversation that a lot of times we don't get in the room. And when you say somebody made $1 million, mm-hmm. he made 50 billion, like the Joe Bezos, like the Bill Gates, the Elon Musk's, right?
Yeah.
Like the lithium battery. That's about to be crazy.
Yeah. Money that's been, you know, they got so much money they'll never spend it all.
Yeah, but they got in the game. Somebody wrote a check to get them in the game, whether it was their mama, their daddy, or they got some vital information that gave them access.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see with this young lady is, she's like, look, I'm willing to give y'all the code. I went in this space, probably was mistreated sometimes.
Oh,
I'm
no
pretty.
Doubt. Come
and
on.
Stuck on, I'm just pretty.
Yeah.
But I got leverage. I understand where I'm at. She had a degree in genetics or something.
Genetics, yeah.
Yeah. So just leveraging your experiences to make people financially literate. That's mm-hmm. what she just did.
That's what she did, man.
Yeah, and I commend it, and I'm in that space, but I see those people.
Excited.
Yep, I'm really excited about it. And so I know next week I got 11 ways to build or rebuild your wealth. So,
and I'm going to bring over, I've done some research on some investing for what's going to happen with this administration.
Yes,
and
sir.
I found some funds that I'm going to share with our audience next week about investing in solar energy. Investing in
infrastructure,
in the green energy,
yep. water,
the infrastructure. Some of these stocks that I think are going to take off. So
all right, I'm with you, because I was going to ask you about that on the next show, but I was just like, because I've been reading Dr. Mona's book about Flint, and they're talking about by 2026, all the piping in Michigan should be replaced. So I'm like, so then my thing is, we've been using water for so long, but we don't really have no real infrastructure to recycle the water when they use it at the plants. Because we around a fresh body of water, we should be really having the best structure. We got good water treatment, but what it cops about when it's, you know, when you're using it to paint cars, we're doing this, we're doing that. Like, what's the real structure of it? How can we innovate and make it better?
Mm-hmm.
She was even talking about, Dr. Mona was talking about, us, in some places, they still got the tree as plumbing.
Yeah.
Like the tree, hollowed out tree with water can go through it. I'm like, but you know, they painted it or urethraned it or whatever. But
right.
I'm like, what? That's crazy, but that's how old our infrastructure is.
Yes, it is.
We've been building, we've been moving so fast, and we never replaced anything.
Yeah, from an infrastructure standpoint, we're like 31 in the world, okay, where we should be number one. And that's part of the current administration's push is, you know, that's part of the stimulus money is to improve our infrastructure, which is our roads, our bridges, our water systems. You know, all that stuff is outdated.
Yep.
And there's going to be money pumped into those, and we as investors want to be a part of that.
Here go my last pot I'm trying to sit on. My last crock pot is I saw an article with the county, the Muskegon County, the contiguous, whatever, Whitehall, everybody else,
uh-huh.
talking about they want to have a divided county.
Yeah.
And they said this, oh, y'all spending all the money on the urban core. Well, guess what? Systems has been put in place with an urban core has been flew over
mm-hmm.
for so many years. Look at our school, look at Muskegon Public, look at the district, look at the houses in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But then anywhere you go outside of this county, out of this urban donut, you got houses that's worth double.
Yeah.
You got streets that's better.
Yep.
You got municipalities that have grocery stores. But when you in the inner city, where's the fresh produce?
There is
Where's the grocery store? You got the farmer's market. You got things that's on the skirts.
But they're bringing it in from the outlying areas, right? They bring them in. It's not here every day.
That's right. It's not here every day. So that's another thing of a power structure, a power hoarding. And now they tell me, we want to break off and be our own little county on the outside.
Yeah.
Because they see the money getting ready to come. And they're like, hold up. They got to rebuild the Muskegon. Yes.
Yeah.
Charles Hackley made sure Muskegon thrived when he brought in those 18 industries in the 1800s, like 1897 or something. It's like in like 18 months, 26 businesses came into this county. So how are we going to get that back when y'all trying to run and divide?
Because
you see the millions coming in and you about to leave.
Yeah, because
you're mad about hoofing to get it, but they ain't never been getting it.
Nope. Mm-mm. It was an NPR yesterday. It was a story about the highway systems in the United States. And it talks about every city that you go to, including Muskegon, where that highway system is currently at was probably a predominantly black neighborhood prior to the construction of that highway.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Look, it's true. That's why Jackson Hill, man, is come where on. The freeway is now.
Because, yeah. Look, you got to think. I call it 31, right?
Yeah.
Highway 31. So in the middle is Muskegon. What's the three on the outside? When you go on 31, you got Fruitport. You got North Muskegon. What's another big one out there that's got money?
Grand Haven?
Grand Haven. There you go.
Yeah.
So they look at that. You can ride, go to all those spaces on the highway. You can leave home, go on the highway, go around the whole Muskegon. Come in to your job if you work as a doctor. Yep. Get back on the highway, go right back on the circle.
Out of here.
And go back home. So that's how they were structured because, and when the highway wasn't around, they say the Muskegon Heights was the richest space because Peck Street was a logging park.
Okay.
So all them houses, I got a book with all the houses showing the value of the home. Some of them homes still worth the same amount from the 1800s to now.
Wow.
I'm like, hold on.
No appreciation in value.
No appreciation in value, Tony. That's crazy. So just think about that. So
yep.
I don't want to be on no more crock pots sitting down on them. But
slow cooker.
As money come in, you'll start seeing how people act and how they're going to try to disappropriate funding when it comes to rebuilding this city.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about just putting up buildings in Muskegon. We need to put up actual programs and making people held accountable that we vote in spaces. So I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.